Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Alive, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, interpretation, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So let us know if there are any topics you'd like covered or guests that we should reach out to for future episodes. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMSY Insights. We are coming to you live today on LinkedIn, Twitter, X, Facebook, and YouTube, of course, where all of our old live streams are archived. Go check out the YouTube channel. Lots of good resources over there under NIMSY Insights. A quick plug before we get into it today. I saw many of you guys at LokeWorld, and it was great to see you over at the Multilingual booth. Many of you know Multilingual. You get it every month in your inbox, in your real mailbox. But we also have a lot of online resources available to you. Go check out Daily News to keep up to date on what's going on in the industry. There's also some great resources. If you like podcasts, which I know you do because you're listening to this, you need to check out Localization Today. It's daily, quick, digestible tidbits that will help you stay informed of what's going on in the language services industry. And so without further ado, no more plugs for today. I think I'm just going to jump right into it. Today, we're talking interpretation. On today's episode, we're going to dive into the intersection between medical interpretation and artificial intelligence. With the rapid advancements in AI, generative AI, and large language models, we're exploring their impact on the sensitive, high-stakes field of medical interpretation. Medical interpretation is unlike any other type of interpretation. It's complex, dealing not only with intricate terminology, but also with profound emotional challenges, trauma, and strict privacy concerns. Will AI meet the demands of such a nuanced role? Can it handle the depth of human empathy required in these situations, or will it fall short of what's needed in this sensitive context? Today, we're going to be exploring these questions and more, delving into where AI fits in, where it struggles, and what the future might hold for interpreters navigating this technology-driven landscape. I am joined by some guests today. We have experts to share their perspective, and I feel quite fortunate because we have pretty much people from all over the interpreting space. First, we have Giovanna Lester. Many of you know Gio. She is a friend of the show and a repeat guest. She is a well-respected voice in the interpreting space, having held positions with the National Board of Certification for Medical Interpreters, Association of Translators and Interpreters of Florida, and Abraches. I'm not going to try to pronounce all of those Brazilian words, but if you know Abraches, you love Abraches. She is a lifelong conference interpreter and managing partner of American Language Services Providers. Jenny Esno serves as the Senior Vice President of Commercial at Globo, where she leads experts to enhance healthcare language access for patients with limited English proficiency and for the deaf and hard of hearing community. With a strong background in healthcare communication solutions, including executive roles at AMN Healthcare and Stratus Video, Jenny is dedicated to improving patient safety and outcomes through technology-driven interpretation services. And last, we have Cesar Palacio. Cesar is a language access consultant and former director of language assistance at UTMD Anderson Cancer Center, and he's here to share our insights from the medical provider side. So I feel very fortunate to have this panel today because we've got the interpreters represented. With Gio, with Jenny, you bring to the conversation the provider's side, right? The LSP side. And Cesar, you can bring to the perspective, well, you can bring a lot of perspectives to this, but you can fill that role of from the buyer side today. So welcome to the show, everybody. It's good to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you, Clicker.
Yeah, well, let's jump right into it, all right? We were chatting a little bit yesterday, and I want to talk first and foremost about medical interpretation, right? I think everyone understands what interpretation is, but maybe a lot of folks who haven't been a part of this space before don't fully understand what is the difference between medical interpretation and other forms of other areas of interpretation. And Gio, I'd like to go to you for this. Like, what makes medical interpretation unique or particularly challenging? What are some of the challenges that medical interpreters face that perhaps aren't there for other forms of interpretation?
Similar to court interpreting, we deal with a lot of emotion, number one. And number two, the terminology, I think it's more challenging than in any other place. And number three, we do need to be connected. We are part of the medical team. That's what people need to understand. We are part of the medical team. There can be no treatment, there can be no understanding if the interpreter is not present. The doctor might ask you, well, where is it hurting? Well, you don't know the name, just say shoulder, but you can point, that is fine. But there are other things that you're supposed to communicate that you can't with just gestures. And the interpreter is there to serve as that cultural language and medical bridge, bringing it all together. So the doctor and the nurses can do their jobs.
So right off the bat, like you mentioned, terminology, you mentioned connection, and the first thing that you mentioned was, oh my gosh.
Emotions.
So emotions, terminology, and connection. And today we're talking about, you know, investigating where AI is good and where AI falls short in this field. And right off the bat, I can say, AI can do terminology pretty well, but when it comes to connection and emotions and all of that stuff, maybe not, right? And so let's go to Jenny over there. What are some of the areas where AI, you've seen AI work out well in this space?
Yeah.
Maybe not work out so well?
You know, I think it's important to say that there's always going to be a need for a human interpreter. I mean, I don't see AI ever replacing interpreters, especially in a healthcare space. And one of the things that Gio mentioned is that the clarification component, the cultural broker, the advocacy component, the empathy, I don't see AI in a healthcare space really being able to step in, grasp that, and help facilitate that communication with our providers. I spend a lot of time walking the halls of the facilities, and I can tell you that the providers are on time schedules, and they need to get their communication happening, but they need to get it right. So they're gonna always want to make sure that they have that human connection, because it's very important. Now, the flip side of that is I'm always looking for where can we find places where we can become more efficient in the hospital system. And for me, I look at the areas, I'll just give a couple examples. When I walk into registration and I see folks trying to schedule appointments, I feel like that's not necessarily a place where that communication channel has to include all of the aspects we just discussed. Or maybe ordering through nutritional services, you know, when I have to, or I'm on a set schedule or a meals plan that I have to follow, I think it's probably a place where we don't have to have an interpreter sit and read through the menu items, if you will. And maybe sometimes, you know, calling in and just getting test results. You know, I'm waiting for a test result. I don't know how to interpret that on an app. I want to call and talk to somebody. Those test results tell me that I have to go and see another physician, or everything's okay and you can move forward and come back for the next visit. So I think we have to find those appropriate places, and there's a lot of collaboration that's going to have to take place.
Yeah. So a lot of like the admin stuff, right? That doesn't require the human connection, and you don't need full cultural understanding and empathy to order a hamburger from the cafeteria, right?
Yep, or find my lost car in the parking garage.
Right. Now, and I'm curious too, an open question to anybody, but maybe I'll start with Cesar here, give him a chance to pipe in, is what are some of the areas where we think, just to preface this question, I'll say, I think a lot of times the conversations that we're having in our industry about AI, it tends to be about how and or if AI will replace the linguists, replace the interpreters, replace the translators, right? And I find it more interesting to have a conversation about how AI can help the translators and the interpreters here. And Gio, to your point, I think the role that medical interpreters play is a unique role, and there's trauma that comes with that. It can be mentally taxing, right? So maybe there's ways that AI can help kind of relieve some of that stuff. But Cesar, tell us a little bit about your experience working with language access within the healthcare system. Like, what are some of the challenges, and how do you see those being overcome?
Well, let me tell you, first of all, that I agree with what Gio and Jenny said. I don't see AI replacing completely or fully the human aspect of medical interpretation. Now, I believe that at this point, we are very in the industry. There are many of our colleagues who are very fearful of what AI is going to do for us. Is it going to replace us completely? Is it going to change everything the way it is? But I think some of the benefits are the kind of tools that AI is going to provide us to become better interpreters and to focus better on the clinical aspects of the interpretation instead of going, as Jenny said, instead of doing the demographics and doing the small tasks that are not really medical interpretation within a hospital. AI is going to help us become better medical interpreters. And this is going to bring more of a professional focus for the medical interpreter. So I think it's going to be a positive tool, AI, in many ways for the medical interpretation industry.
Thank you. So, Cesar, you say AI is going to be a positive tool for the medical interpretation industry. Gio, from the interpreter side, rebuttal. Because I've heard a lot of interpreters and linguists, there's cohorts out there that are fully embracing the recent technological advancements, and there's cohorts out there that are completely rejecting the technological. So what, yeah, exactly. So what are you hearing out there on the streets, if you will?
Look, technology is the nemesis of our own creation. That's it. It keeps us on our toes. But people are not looking at it as the way nemesis, the good thing that nemesis do for us. They're keeping us on our toes, forcing us to look at things from different angles, learning how to use it to grow. Technology is a great tool. We need to learn how to use it, to do research, to learn faster. And the word out here, the main problem, actually, Tucker, is that users of translation services, the buyers of translation services, do not fully understand our role. There is a hospital here in Florida, my friend Vanessa, who is now the president of CCHI, I believe she's watching this because I invited her. She was telling us, sharing with us, that the hospital fired all the interpreters, cleared it to use only, I'm sorry, but that doesn't make much sense.
Well, not to you and not to me, right? And not to any of us, and probably not to anybody listening here, right? Because we understand. But that's a real problem, and it's not a new problem, is that language services in all of its forms are fundamentally not understood by the buyers of it.
Sorry, you made me think of Renato, who said that language services are like toilet paper.
Yeah.
You may realize its importance when you miss
Right. And I have a
it.
feeling there's going to be a hospital system in Florida or wherever you said it was that's going to be running out of toilet paper pretty soon. And they're going to have some dirty hands, let's put it that way. But Jenny, how does that, how do you approach that? You have a buyer, and I don't want to call, it's not because they're stupid. Right? It's just that they don't understand. It's not their day job to understand languages, which, thank God, that's why everyone on this panel has a job today, because it's not understood by the end client typically. But how do you approach that when you have a client or a potential client that you're talking to, and they say, oh, yeah, we're just going to replace all of our interpreters with AI. I saw this great presentation from Mark Zuckerberg the other day, and we don't need to pay a lot of money for translation anymore.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen. And we have these conversations because AI has already shown in various industries that it is prone to having issues. And we're not going to take something that is prone to having issues and affect somebody's life with that. And then as a healthcare system, have the liability that falls with that. And I believe it was Deepak Patel, our CEO, who authored a write-up about being in a self-driven car and the issues that self-driving car had and the way that it didn't know to go around a police officer, I think was the example, who was giving hand signals. You know, when you think about this in a healthcare situation, we can't afford, when somebody is given a very serious diagnosis, for that diagnosis to be incorrect. I go back to an example. This happened to me probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. I was in California. It was a doctor who chose to use Google Translate to give a heart patient who spoke Spanish, Mestizo, a transcript. And that patient chose to not eat for 2 weeks. It was a low sodium. I think you were supposed to eat fruits and vegetables. And what happened 2 weeks later, when we were asked to have a consult, the interpreter was asked to have a consult. We brought in an on-site interpreter, and we found out with this piece of paper that this patient just stopped eating and was gravely sick because he didn't understand what that document had said and how it had converted it. We're going to have those same issues. It's going to take a human to review anything and everything that is happening around AI. The flip side of that is where we really, at least from the vendor side, from the Globo side, what we're hoping is that AI will augment these interpreters as they're doing their jobs. Maybe it helps give those transcripts so that we can do continuity of care and hand sessions to a colleague and have the documentation, or maybe the patient now gets access. You know, I'm a hearing person who writes in English and I visit my doctor. I'm on a notepad writing everything down as I'm sitting with, you know, a family member. I'm taking notes. Well, we've also learned with our LEP friends, what is verbally said and what is written sometimes doesn't align. So we're hoping that maybe these AI tools will aid the interpreters to be able to provide that continuity of care to our patients, which will make it better for the provider, higher, better success rates. You know, at the end of the day, they want their patients to be healed. They don't want them coming back immediately into the ER after they just left with harder diabetes issues because they didn't understand instructions.
Yep.
It's a tool, it's an aid.
If I may add to that, and Caesar, I would like to hear you speak about it too. A few years ago, gosh, over a decade ago, my goodness gracious, in New York, some hospitals were fined because of recidivism of LEP patients, LEP low English proficiency patients. And they were fined because the rule seems to be if the patient comes back with the same issue 2 weeks later, then the hospital is responsible because there was lack of communication. They're going to check if a certified interpreter was used, if the proper services were provided, et cetera, et cetera. I wish, I don't know if it stopped or what's going on, but nobody wants to respect what we do. And that's how I feel disrespected for my colleagues. Caesar.
One thing, listening to both Jenny and Gio, one thing that I have always tried to convey to the interpreters that work for me is that we as interpreters, and mind you, I was not just an administrator, I came up as a translator and interpreter later. As interpreters, we need to get involved in the administrative side. We have too many administrators who have never been involved in languages. They have never been interpreters or translators, and they do not understand what we do or what our patients are. They don't fully understand what our patients need. If we as interpreters get more involved in management, we can help educate the administrators above us so mm-hmm. they understand that the services are needed and why they are needed. In my career as an administrator over 16 years at MD Anderson, I had contact with thousands of interpreters. And I saw some that had the potential to go into management. And every time I asked them, hey, would you be interested in this or that? They would say, no, I'm happy where I am. And mind you, I can tell you the best job I have ever had, and I've had lots of jobs, was being a medical interpreter. But at some point, some of us have to take that step and educate our administrators.
Yes.
And with the help of companies such as Global, you heard what Jenny said. It was very honest. With the help of LSPs, trying to educate the administrators, we're going to make things better for her.
I hope
in the industry.
I hope so. Sorry to interrupt. I want to hear Jenny too. But when you talk about administration and interpreters, 1986, Jackson Memorial Hospital in Florida opened their own interpreting department to provide assistance to foreign patients. And it was great. Even an insurance company called Bupa put a concierge there to take care of their own patients. It's all gone now. It's all bye-bye. Not because of technology, but because they do not respect what we do. They do not understand what we do. So we're gone from there.
So. That is true. And one thing that hospitals are always considering is, administrators change and different ideas and policies come to being within the hospitals. But we have to keep that education process. And one thing the hospitals are always considering also is cost. And when you have services like that are more expensive, they unfortunately cut on those services. But as we educate them and let them know, let them see how that can help with readmission statistics and with health outcomes, that is going to help the system and the industry as well. It's complicated, but and it's going to take a long time, but it can be done, I believe.
Yeah. And readmission, provision of language access services is directly tied to readmission rates, right? Mm-hmm. NIMSI actually did some research and published some research several years ago, but the concepts haven't changed, right? Is that if you provide language, specifically the research says, if you provide in-person human interpretation services, your readmission rates drop, as opposed to only providing VRI, video remote interpreting services, mm-hmm. right? And those are the conversations, because if you go to, this, I have a love-hate relationship with this word educate, right? We need to educate our clients, right? Because on the one hand, we do. Right? The clients need educated, or the stakeholders or the senior management, they need educated, right? But on the other hand, I'm not a fan of that term, because it can come off as condescending, right? They don't know what they don't know, right? And they're trying to make the best decisions that they can. They're not, mustache twirling bureaucrats thinking, how can we save some money? I don't care how many immigrants die on my watch, right? I don't think that's the case. They're just trying to make the best out of it. Right. So it's like, how do we have those conversations? And this is tying into, I'm going to bring up a comment here on screen, if I can find the right button, because I moved all my buttons around. Why did I do that? There we go. Comment on screen here. Vanessa says, this is why hospitals must maintain their in-house language access team. So now we're talking about something else. And I know you have experience with this, Cesar, and I see Gio clapping behind the scenes here. It is easier to be a part of the care team when one is employed by the same healthcare institutions as the other members of the care team. Remote/vendor interpreters often struggle to be heard by the care teams they support and to fully exercise the healthcare interpreters' established roles beyond a quote-unquote conduit to actually accelerate health equity in the community of the hospital serves. Removing staff interpreters from our hospitals removes the checks and balances from within those hospitals and our best language access advocates from within our local communities, right? And this is a follow-up comment to Vanessa, you're posting faster than I can read them. the first comment was, big box LSPs already approach hospital clients in a way that markets their OPI / VRI solutions, quote unquote, as holistic. That gives hospitals the idea that remote vendor services can completely replace staff interpreters. That's what happened twice this year in Florida hospitals. So in the future, when the same big box LSPs approach hospitals with their AI, quote unquote, solutions, and we know they're in development, it's likely the same hospitals will rush to replace outsourcing with AI. It's a race to the bottom. Now, okay, I'm gonna turn this over to you guys, right? But I really want to hear maybe start with Cesar, your experience with staff interpreters versus going through a vendor like Globo, since we have someone from Globo on the team, right? Because I don't think you're going to be able to have a staff interpreter for 200 different languages out there. So I think there's a place for both. But Cesar, what's your experience with staff interpreters and the need for those versus working with a vendor on site versus VRI? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I can tell you, and you're correct. We're not going to have staff interpreters or staff hired by the hospitals for all the languages we need. That's true. When I started at MD Anderson, we had staff interpreters for 6 or 7 languages. We increased it to 9. We even had ASL. And one thing that we did was we were bringing in contractors for in-person interpretation. Back then, we didn't have VRI. We only had the phone or live interpreter or staff interpreters. One thing we did was, as we brought contractors from different companies, because we had a couple of companies helping us, we started selecting those interpreters who were, and I'm talking about a specialized hospital. We were a cancer hospital, and the terminology was even more challenging than in other environments. And we were selecting those contract interpreters that were better qualified, that were working with the staff a lot better. And we kept bringing them back. On any given day, we had anywhere from 8 to 45 interpreters coming in to supplement our 30 in-house interpreters. And as we worked with those interpreters that we selected, they felt and they became part of our staff because they were coming on a regular basis. They were learning with our interpreters how to work with our staff and our patients. So that relationship with the LSP that allowed us to work with their interpreters and allowed us to bring the same interpreters that we wanted, and working with interpreters on making them part of our team as much as possible, was very beneficial for our patients and our staff. So that's one thing that we have to work on. Now, once we had VRI come into the picture, VRI was very helpful because even having, you know, 70 interpreters on premises during the day was not enough in certain cases. I can tell you, I remember the statistics. When I was there, we were providing 200 hours of interpretation every single day, constantly. Wow. 200 hours constantly. So we had all kinds of situations. And sometimes we needed the phone, sometimes we needed the VRI because we couldn't have enough humans working there. So it's needed in certain situations to provide the services needed, but that can be, it has to be balanced. How many staff interpreters we use, how many VRI services we use, and phone services and what have you. You have to find a balance. Unfortunately, because of cost and the need for efficiency, sometimes the hospitals have to have more VRI and more telephone interpretation than live interpretation, because it's needed.
It's kind of the reality, and it's like one of those things, like, you don't have to like it, but it's just kind of the reality. You know, today on November 6th, there's a lot of things that you don't have to like. I couldn't resist. But my point is, like, when you look at language access laws, right, they're mandated from the federal level, right, executive orders, and the different acts. I can't cite all of them from memory, right? But it's like, you are mandated, if you're providing services to the public, you are mandated to provide interpretation services, translation services, language access services, right? You're not mandated to provide good ones and your good service, right? I mean, but this is kind of like the loophole that I think a lot of hospitals will say, check, we're providing services. Why? Because they ran an RFP. They've got a vendor on under contract, and they hardly ever use that vendor. And it's just a checkbox. So Jenny, you're chomping at the bit here.
I was jumping. Let me just say, from the vendor perspective, I will tell you that we never walk into a healthcare system. I personally, my team, Global, we never walk into a healthcare system and say, let's replace your on-site interpreters. That would not make any sense. They are the conduit to the community. They are the efficiencies that you need to be able to carry the culture through the healthcare system and to continue to train. What we see is a nationwide staffing shortage. We have seen it from the nurses and the doctors and the providers. We're also going to see it from the interpreters. So we're going to have to augment all of those systems. What we're saying is, if you use your EMR and you do the right integration and you know who those patients are who need services, you, the administrators, are going to pick those high-risk, complex care patients who should have an on-site interpreter with them through their care journey, and then you will augment those other sessions with me, the vendor, for those video and audio sessions. Now, integrating your staff interpreters into my platform is a huge benefit, because now then, as Cesar mentioned, those efficiencies, those work efficiencies, now when your interpreters are sitting idle, they're taking the calls as opposed to the vendor taking the calls. Now, what we're talking about today is AI, and how do we tie that all together and make sure that quality is across the board? Because no matter who the interpreter is, you just said it, Tucker, quality, it's a human servicing a human. Mm-hmm. So whether it's an on-site interpreter, it's a video interpreter, it's an audio interpreter, it's a human servicing a human. And there's going to be quality issues in any modality. That's where I see AI stepping in and managing quality and supporting quality and tracking quality. So I can come back to that hospital and say, here's all your sessions. We track them through your EMR. We know every patient that is LEP or deaf and hard of hearing and needs assistance. And these are the quality metrics that we can provide because we have this AI technology. It does it for me when I'm on a call and I see everything I said on that call and I went, oh, should I have said that? It checked my quality on a Zoom meeting. It's going to be able to help with the interpretation standpoint. Gio, I see you jumping up and down. Go ahead, go, go, go.
Holding my hand up. Yeah. Look, Jenny, as I said, technology forces us to move forward, to grow, to be better than where we are, you know, step up in our roles. However, when it comes to AI and the current situation, what I really, really, really would love to see is AI producers, the developers, working very closely with the languages of lesser diffusion, because they are right now also called low resource languages. For those who understand, those are languages that don't have material written enough to train the LLMs. Okay, so I would love to have those who are producing this artificial intelligence technology tools to be focusing on those. Because for the others, even though we have kind of a shortage, the shortage as far as I'm concerned, related to money rather than lack of personnel. Okay. All right. Go work with those low resource languages, create the resources, do research, create the tools. Because when someone who speaks Hmong or Tinigra comes here to a hospital in Florida, there are no interpreters for those languages here. But if we can use AI to at least give the basic information to the doctor until we locate somebody who can help, that would be awesome.
It's like a Band-Aid, not a solution, right? Not a holistic solution, as Vanessa was saying, right?
If necessary, but at least that first step. Understand what the person is there for and start working from there. But we still have, you know, all those low resource languages without any representation in the tech world. We need to have them. We have people who speak those languages coming here and they don't get taken care of. Or like Jenny was saying, the guy speaks Mixteco. Mixteco is not Spanish. No,
that's okay. Thank you. I was waiting for someone to rip us apart in the comments ever since Jenny said that. I was like, ooh.
You know, but I understand what Jenny was saying.
We're
going to
get shit for that.
It's not Spanish.
I know.
It's not Spanish.
I know, and
it's
I know you know that.
It's a different language.
Exactly.
And you... And that's why you can't do a Google Translate for Spanish and think you're going to cover that patient. It's right. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Caesar.
Well, if I may, I would like to make a comment. Currently, we're thinking a lot in the industry, at least on the interpreter side. I think we're thinking a lot about AI being an interpreter. We're thinking a lot about AI replacing the interpreters. And we need to think, I think we need to think a little bit about the tools that AI can provide us that are not necessarily interpretation, but can help us in the interpretation industry. For example, I was talking earlier about the using your resources, whether it's in-person, phone, or VRI resources in a hospital. I used to have two, just as an example, I used to have two dispatchers who would take the calls from the hospital staff for interpretation, and they would have to decide if they were going to send an interpreter or they would recommend using the phone or VRI. If we have an AI system that recognizes who is calling, where are they calling from, and that system can send a call to VRI, phone, or a human, that can help tremendously. And it can even lower costs in the department. So we need to think about those tools that AI can give us to help us become better. There are tons of applications where AI can help us improve without replacing the human interpreter. So AI is, I personally don't think that AI is going to replace the medical interpreter in the near future. Well, it may take 100 years.
I gotta say, guys, I'm a little disappointed because on this call we have interpreter, we have a vendor, and we have a client, and we also have an active comment section, and no one's arguing with each other. It seems to me like everyone's kind of on the same page with this. Partnering, not replacing, right? Augmenting, not getting rid of, right? And I just want to bring this up really quick because Vanessa put a link here into the chat over on LinkedIn, if you're listening to this, for the National Council on Interpreting in Healthcare, Guidance for Healthcare Organizations Evaluating the Potential Use of AI-Generated Interpreting. And I just want to read the purpose of this guidance. As of mid-2024, healthcare organizations in the United States, make it bigger. Oh, I can't make it bigger. Okay. Are being approached by companies offering to replace their interpreting and translation services provided entirely by artificial intelligence, that is, quote unquote, machine interpretation produced by an AI software during real-time human communication. And it goes on. And this is a great document. There's a link for it over on LinkedIn. Go check it out. I want to ask your guys' opinion on this. Gio's shaking her head. You've seen this before.
Yes.
But first of all, is that happening? Like, companies are coming, and is this happening, or is this a boogeyman that we're afraid of?
No, it is happening, unfortunately.
Really?
Yes.
Don't name names. They might be NIMSY clients.
In 2013, together with Delamora Interpreting, I held a meeting called a conference. It was a three-day event, Finding the Parallels. Because at that time, there was a huge confusion between that was, let me organize my thoughts, I apologize. That's when certification for medical interpreters was rolling out, and some court interpreters felt that we were stepping into their zone.
Okay? Oh.
Right. So we had that conference, Finding the Parallels, where they came together, how we could help each other, and we set up the timeline. The IMIA started working towards medical interpreting way back, right after the civil rights law in 1964. So they started, I believe, in around 68. That's when they started rolling out guidelines, etc., for interpreters, medical interpreters. They tried to work together with the CHI, the NCHIC, and the National Board. They tried to work together with it. They consider themselves an umbrella organization. And unfortunately, the reality is, even with all these advocates, with all these organizations working so hard, it is so difficult for medical interpreters to get the minimum respect they need. It is so difficult. That's why I stopped interpreting clinical settings, because they couldn't understand the responsibility I had on my shoulders. They couldn't understand. I didn't respect that. So I said, no, let me step away, because I was getting very upset.
Yeah.
The reality is, nowadays, not nowadays, that's stupid, Gio, sorry. Money has always been the point, the bottom line.
Yep.
That's it. And that's what is happening, regardless of how trained somebody is, how well-versed somebody is, how engaging that person is, how well that person works. If they find somebody who charges less or a tool that can replace that person and will cost them less, they will use that.
Tucker, I'm going to say something controversial. I'm going to ask Gio something controversial here.
Good, because I was about to. So you take the lead for me.
Let me take the wheel for a second. Yeah. and I hadn't thought this out. So this is just coming, you know, as I listen to what you're saying, and I know there are only so many languages today that have certification for medical interpretation. I think
we were going to ask the same question. Just for
we were going to go. So technically on the same page here.
Yeah, okay. Board offers six, and CCHI added one more, Arabic.
So let's call it seven languages, I think you said, with certification today for medical interpretation. Do you see a world where AI trained like Perplexity or ChatGPT or all these different sites that you can use gets to a point where it gets us to that 90%, 70%, 80%, 90% confidence level in the communication that it's providing? Again, going back to what we said from the very beginning, it's going to miss the cultural aspect, the empathy aspect, the
ad hoc,
I have to give you a very difficult diagnosis and take you through a care journey aspect. But do you think there's a world where AI can take us to a level of security on at least the communication factor, because it's going to get modeled to where good is good enough and certification only covers X?
No. No. I this is personal, okay? And I'm talking from a point of ignorance. I have never studied the work that they do with LLMs, how they train AI for medical interpreting. So I'm speaking from that point of not knowing, being 100% honest with you. So you have plenty of space to correct me and educate. I don't have a problem with the word educate, Tucker. So now I don't see that. Let me tell you what happened to me once. Brazilian patient, Cuban doctor. The doctor comes in speaking Spanish. I ask him to recognize me, acknowledge me as the interpreter. I had already introduced myself to the patient. And the doctor goes, oh, he understands it, don't you? That's somebody of authority belittling my needs. What am I going to say? Oh, yes, the guy said. And then the question about where does it hurt? Why are you here? What's your name? Blah, 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 go by. And then the doctor asks the guy to lay down, belly up, so he can ask more questions and check him out. The Brazilian gentleman couldn't understand. He spoke in Spanish. And the guy gave me this puzzled look. And the doctor goes, what's going on? I explained everything to him. And then he let me do my job. Mm-hmm. I was working as an advocate there because I refused to leave the room when he told me he didn't need my services. I said, no. Title VI says this gentleman needs an interpreter in his own language. I will stay. If you don't need my services, that's fine. When you need it, I'll intervene. Otherwise, I would have been out, accepted.
Yep.
AI, how is AI going to say, sorry, doctor, this gentleman needs an interpreter as per American law?
Yep.
Is AI trained to do that? I'm sorry. I don't think so. But there is a moment when AI can do better than I did. I had to stop and wash my eyes because I started crying based on what was going on with the doctor and patient exchange there. AI doesn't have that feeling. In that moment, AI can behave better than I did.
Yeah.
I recognize it. But there's got to be a balance. We need to understand where the fine line is, where one can help the other. So they can work together in advance and bring what we need the most to this environment we are discussing. Medical interpreting is—it's so important.
And it takes us right back to where we started. You know, there's some things that AI does well, some things it does really not well, right? Yeah. So it's just a matter of figuring out what it does well and leveraging it for there. I'm shocked today because I didn't realize there are actually companies out there that say, "Look, AI will solve all of your problems." I thought that was like a meme. Right? I thought that was like the boogeyman that people talk about. But I believe you, and I believe you guys, and I believe the comments and all of that stuff, that there are companies out there doing that. That's wrong, right? That's going to get people killed, right? Because that's the thing when we talk about the medical setting is the stakes are a lot higher than if you're translating for Facebook, right? Or some software company that maybe releases a release cycle because of something, right? So... Mm-hmm.
Well, translators do less than 1% of all the translation work in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Just less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
AI is doing most of it.
And good, right? Because all of that work that no one, it's not cost effective to pay a translator to do it, right?
No,
so I say good, like machine translation, it's a net positive for the world, right? We just need to use it responsibly. Responsibly. Right.
You, for example, puts a little stamp on their pages because they have to translate everything into 24 languages. They use machine translation to do the work, but there is a little link on each page for each language, that you click and it's going to tell you this is machine translation. The original is available here. When we and the proper translation will be published when it's available.
Yeah,
they do that, and they will translate based on how many times that page is touched and visited.
Yeah,
and then they translate it.
As long as it's transparent, right?
It's transparent. Well, I don't have a problem.
We can talk about responsible. We can talk about quality. And I think everyone's in agreement. No one's going to argue with you like, oh, we need responsible AI usage. No one's going to argue with you and say, oh, you know, patients deserve high quality language access, right? Those are very non-controversial statements. The conversation, debate, if you will, comes into, okay, what does responsible mean? What is quality? Gio, you said it. You know, you used those famous two words, good enough.
Yeah.
What is good enough?
Right. Vanessa made a correction to something we were discussing before, the number of languages. Right now, there is kind of a neutral exam. It's like English to English. If you understand what is being said If you can express yourself well in English, you also receive a certification. And that's available for language like Brazilian Portuguese, because they don't have English into Brazilian Portuguese into English, they don't have that. So, Haitian Creole, Italian, a few other languages. So you can get recognized as having the necessary knowledge to work.
Do you see a world, again, another controversial statement? I'm just going to ask.
Jenny, you keep saying stuff like, I'm going to make you my co-host if you keep it up.
Oh, that could be dangerous. Yeah. We could have fun. Do you see a world where interpreters help train these models? Do you see a world where interpreters are recruited? Because technology is changing every single day. What we talk about today, I guarantee you, if we came back in a month, there's going to be some changes. But healthcare moves slow, and we know that. Healthcare as a whole moves very slow to adopt and to set the rules. And it should always be patient first. It's always risk management and patient experience who's going to make these decisions on where they're going to tolerate that within a healthcare system. But do you see a world where our certified interpreters, our medically certified interpreters, are engaged in this technology and they are helping to train these models so they become an augment to the way we do business in our healthcare systems?
Let me send you a question back. Did Global reach out to the IMIA, to the National Council on Healthcare Interpreting? Did they reach out to CCHI saying, hey, we have this tool and we'd like to make it available to you to train your personnel and also for you to train ours so we can make healthcare interpreting available to a wider audience? Did that take place? Did you guys reach out to the IMIA and other? Yeah, so yeah. That's why. See, you're coming from outside the world and saying, we got this for you, but you don't know what we actually need. So we need to work together. That's what we need.
And I think that's what that's why we need conversations like this, right? Yeah. We're all together. We're having these conversations, and it's the needs. It's balancing the needs of the patient, right? The needs of the interpreter, slash advocate. I could foresee a future when we don't call them interpreters anymore. We call them bilingual advocates, right?
Because So the thing is, Jenny, just to answer your question, when that invitation is not present and you come and give us a gift that we did not ask for, you're the boogeyman.
May I say something,
Cesar?
In all fairness to Global and to other large LSPs, they don't just come and do things on their own. I can say that I have seen many companies, including Global, let's say some companies that are very responsible, and they ask for the opinions of interpreters, qualified interpreters. They ask opinions from managers, from administrators, and from other people in their research phase, and even in their testing phase to see if things work. It's not something that they just, someone in a corner office said, oh, let's do this and we'll do it. It requires a lot of resources, a lot of funding to come up with one of these systems, and they don't do it just out of a whim. So I have worked on the LSP side many years ago. I have worked as an independent translator and interpreter, and I have worked in the hospitals. I even had my own company for a couple of years. And I have seen companies and hospitals and look for that knowledge before they come up with just a whimsical idea. So we need to be fair and ask the questions. I would ask Jenny, who has worked with you? What kind of research are you doing? And believe me, I have been working some with Global for the last few months, and I have seen the research they're doing. I have seen the questions they're asking, and it's not something that just came out of the blues, and isn't it?
Yeah. So,
Let's see, we were sparing. That's what she said.
Yeah, no question.
So I had to, you know, go back. But
and thank you for and thank you for doing that. And thank you, Cesar. I mean, at the end of the day, we don't have a tool. Yeah, I mean, there is no tool, but we also have, you know, a resource pool of folks that we lean on, mentors, you know, in the industry to say, this is where we need to go. And we have an access to over 4,000, 4,500 interpreters within the platform of what we do today that we are, you know, we went to them, we produced a white paper to say, hey, this just isn't really viable yet. We're doing the responsible steps. I can tell you from my standpoint as a vendor, I'm not talking to any of my hospital systems saying, hey, we're going to replace everything with AI because I don't even know what AI is going to look like. I have no clue what it's going to look like in the future. But these types of open conversations help me start to frame where originally I said, being in this industry now for 14 years, you're not replacing a human. It now is starting to make me think I can solve some of those challenges where I have a tough time with a resource pool and being able to have coverage. And I have to be able to take those calls of how to help you place your orders because you're on a low sodium diet or you need to schedule appointments. One of the things that really drives me nuts in these healthcare systems and working in the communities is being able to be that advocate outside of the hospital and step into the community and say, hey, you know what? This population struggles with getting prostate exams when they need to have prostate exams. Well, if you have that right community group and development and technology that will get out there, then we just help the providers. I just can go to my healthcare systems and say, we augmented where you don't have the resources and we helped you provide better outcomes for your patients, which is the goal, you know, patient first in these healthcare systems. You know, is there other lines of business outside of healthcare where this might work quicker, easier, better? Possibly, but that's not where we're focused at all. Right now for us, it's how do we think about the future of healthcare when language truly matters the most, when connections truly matter the most, when being an advocate for these LEPs truly matters the most. That's what we're looking for.
Thank you. And my recommendation to influence supplement the research that you're doing, everything that your company is doing, is to reach out to these companies and kind of partner with them, work together, help them, help you.
Yeah.
Work together with these entities because it is very important for them to understand and to educate their members, you know.
I was going to say, because it has to go both ways too, though, right? Because I've read some of these associations, these acronyms out there in our industry, like some of the, and I'll just say it, I'll be the one to be controversial now. Sometimes they're, I feel, my opinion, this is not the official opinion of NIMSY Insights LLC, right? But I feel like sometimes these certification processes and, you know, guidelines and all of this stuff, effectively what it's doing, whether intentional or not, it's just serving as a barrier to entry, which is keeping new interpreters from coming into the industry. So it's keeping the supply lower, right? There's a balance to be had there, because I'm not advocating for a lack of regulation, lack of certifications, right? No. You know, I could form a body today, you know, pick an acronym and, you know, issue guidelines that say AI is evil and no interpreter should ever touch it. Just because I did that doesn't mean, right?
And now, look, I don't know any entity out there who is doing that. There is even Safe AI that talks about guidelines on where and how to use AI. National Council on Interpreting Healthcare also does the same thing. So does IMIA.
And those guys have job security because we're going to be talking about it for a while.
You know, so I don't know what they're doing, but I do understand the need for certification because, I mean, do you remember the case that happened in Florida, the $44 million case where the guy says, oh my gosh, I forgot the word, but basically he was saying that he was feeling nauseated or something, and they understood as he was inebriated and thought he was had taken some drugs and was out of his mind, and he ended up paraplegic. One word, one simple word. So the exams are there not to create a barrier. On the contrary, they provide you access to all the necessary training. They tell you, you go to their websites, you can get training here, 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 there.
I agree. I agree.
Those are the guardrails that we need to make sure that when somebody says, tengo una migraña, it's not understood as piranha, and then goes, everything goes, you know, crazy.
Yeah. I really want to, I know we're out of time, but because my question I want to ask you is, does the same expectations and standards, can they realistically apply to Tigrinya translators, right? Yeah. To these low resource, as to use your verbiage, languages of lesser diffusion, right? Because I get it. Like, it's, you can still have a healthy supply of Spanish interpreters, qualified, certified, and all that stuff. But when we get into these, you know, Mixteco, how do we do that, right? And there aren't even certification programs in existence for those right now.
Well, sorry to take the time here, just a quick one. There is a group in, I believe it's New York, that brings together women who are refugees and train them to become medical interpreters in their own languages, and they can qualify through the EOE. But,
and that's another thing I was thinking about as through this conversation. I started off this conversation by like, oh, we're so lucky because we have everybody in the conversation. We have interpreters, we have vendors, we have, you know, Cesar, you're everything. But today you're kind of playing the foil of the buyer, right? What I realized, though, halfway through this conversation, we don't have the CBOs at the table, the community-based organizations. Right. And because, Jenny, you mentioned, like, so much of what you want to do is go out and really, you're talking about advocacy for different groups. You know, this group culturally is doesn't get prostate exams. Right. And that doesn't fit into the model or the panel that we have today. Right. Because it's none of our, that's none of our responsibility, quote unquote. Right. That's the need that the community based organizations fill.
Right.
But anywho, all right, we are out of time. We were out of time a while ago, but it's a good conversation. So closing thoughts, we'll start with you, Gio.
Thank you so very much for opening this space for us, Tucker and Nimzy. Jenny, I look forward to the results of your work. As I said, I'm speaking to you from a place of ignorance as to what exactly you're doing. I have a lot of questions. Cesar, thank you so very much for bringing your perspective into the conversation. I look forward to seeing where this is going to take us. Thank you.
Cesar, why don't you, any closing thoughts, any what are key takeaways for our audience today?
Well, thank you, first of all, for this forum. I want to ask everyone to, you know, think about what AI is bringing to the table. It's not, I don't think they will be able to, any company will be able to replace human interpreters in at least 100 years. there are too many nuances in the languages to have a computer interpret for you. So think about it in a positive way, because there are going to be tools that are going to help us. Yeah. Don't let the fear get into your mind, and research what it is. Thank you for the opportunity, and always research the companies you're working with. There are serious companies out there who are doing research, are trying to improve things, and they are working with the interpreter community and the clients as well to improve things.
Right. Thank you.
Closing argument, Jenny.
Yeah, no, I just want to say, you know, I am extremely grateful for our interpreters. I can tell you, we started this conversation with human interpreters are not going anywhere. I don't have a service that I can stand behind and sell and feel confident and comfortable when I walk into a hospital system if we don't have the interpreters that we have today. So I want to make sure that I am crystal clear when I say that on behalf of Global, on behalf of Jenny Esno, we can survive without the interpreters that we have. What I look to as a company is for this type of collaboration. Cesar, we mentioned, we have the Innovation Council, and what we're trying to do is, what does the future look like so that we can augment and help our interpreters? Because at the end of the day, if we don't keep providing tools, then our interpreters are going to consistently get burnt out. They're going to not have advancement in their careers, and we're not going to change and shape the way healthcare is done today. And I'm in this industry, I can tell you, because I want to see better outcomes for our patients. And I want our interpreters to be happy and healthy in their jobs as well. It's a two-way street. So, very grateful for this collaboration. Tucker, thank you. If you ever need a co-host, I'm here for you, buddy.
Oh, don't tempt me. Don't tempt me. All right. Thank you, everybody. I will take us out today. Ladies, gentlemen, and chat, we are out of time today. If you enjoyed this NIMSY Live experience, then join us next time. Go over to our LinkedIn page, click that events tab, and you'll see all of the NIMSY Lives and upcoming events that we have scheduled here at NIMSY Insights. I appreciate our guests today, Gio, Jenny, and Cesar. I appreciate my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights doing all the hard work so I can have these interesting conversations. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, everyone in chat today. I think Vanessa wins the award for most active chat today. Thank you for all the insights and links that you provided as well. You've given me homework, which I always enjoy. I look forward to next time. Cheers.